He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Hello to our listeners for this week's Car Keys show with Jada Markin and Robin Leach. And one thing that I have noted that has come to light in the automotive news sector is something that many owners probably never do or notice that they do or may notice that they may not be able to do, which is coming forth in the automotive industry assembly process. And that is the deletion of the dipstick in cars and trucks. And it may be brewing to expand beyond where it has reached so far. The new Ram pickup trucks apparently are starting with a model that will not have a dipstick for 2025. Audi already has deleted the dipstick in some of their models. I know that because an A5 Cabriolet no longer has a dipstick. BMW apparently, according to the article reading, headline, Dipstick Slides into Obsolescence, has already deleted dipsticks in some, if not all, of their current models. I do not know where Mercedes and Rolls-Royce and all the other makes and models stand at this point, but since it made headlines in one of my weekly news rags, I thought listeners might want to know that if they sometime raise the hood of their car, in the new cars, let's say, and look to check the level of their oil, they will not be able to do so in some cases now, and in more cases probably in the next few years.
All right. Well,
it's
Tesla
being left to computers.
Already,
it's been left to that to computers.
So here's my take on that. And I was a little. I've had my Volkswagen Touareg now for like 8 or 9 years. 8 years, I think. And I did go, I remember going down and looking for the dipstick and could not find it. And this is a 2015 model.
You have no dipstick in that already? Way back then?
Way back then. And this was weird, I thought. But sure enough, it's in the settings and you can go check the oil level by using a screen and not getting your hands dirty. You can look at it both ways. It makes a lot of sense not to have to go under the engine to check the levels of fluids. And come to think of it, they could put levels of washing fluid, too, because there's nothing more frustrating than running out of washer fluid when you just got a big insect invasion or splattering on your windshield.
True, but or, I want to interrupt.
So I have no problems with dipsticks going away. The other thing is, too, people check their oil a lot less than before because cars burn, I think, a lot less oil than they did, a couple decades ago.
True.
So, all in all, I guess it makes some sense. Now, not knowing that you have oil in your car and that you should keep the level up to a certain level is, of course, another problem. But, I think that's fine.
Okay, I agree with that last comment, and because... Yes, I agree also that engines are being made with more or less chances for finding a bad engine in the production system that might burn oil. In the old days, and that goes back into the last century, automakers were not willing to consider that they had an engine that was using an excessive amount of oil if it burned less than 600 miles, i.e., I don't know, whether it was a week, a month,
600?
Or whatever.
That's a lot of oil.
Some engines did that. And I was known in my vehicles' histories of ownership to be very irate if I had a engine that used more than a quart of oil between changes. And changes back then were between 3,500 miles and 5,000 miles, depending on the make and model and recommendations. Now, changes go up to 10,000 miles or whenever the computer tells you that your oil is down to less than 10% useful life left you to change that. So engines that go 10,000 miles without using oil seems to be the norm that I expect out of my vehicles. And not having a dipstick to check that in between, yes, you can do it electronically now. I have yet to figure out how to get to it easily in the menu on the A5 Audi. I know it can be done, and once you learn how to do it, it probably is easy. But the first time you go under the hood to look for that dipstick, as you might have done with your Touareg, and couldn't find it, it can be a very frustrating situation for some people.
Yes.
But be it as it may, you're right, Jay, and the article is right. They are going to go the way of whatever you want to call it. As for the other possibilities of having that happen in the windshield washer fluid bottles, many cars already have low indication sensors in them. But low can mean too low if you get into a situation, as I once did going to Florida, where the bug population in the air was so intense that you really had to use your windshield washer an awful lot. And having not a full bottle at that point could have meant an inconvenience of having to stop and buy the stuff. But that's it on the dipstick situation, as far as I'm concerned.
I was going through your 75th anniversary of Motor Trend, and we brushed on it last week, I think.
But it's interesting
to see, and the brands that were around even 20, 30 years ago, and the brands that are out today, and the names of cars, and the ones that actually still have the same nameplates and
revived with different vehicles.
And so, I think one of the older nameplates, if not the oldest, is the Suburban, the Chevy Suburban, which was also the GMC Suburban. Actually, all of the manufacturers, the American manufacturers, had a big body-on-frame SUV that they called Suburban. It was not a trademark name until the late 70s by GM. So Chrysler was using the name as well on their larger SUVs.
I don't remember that, but that's interesting.
Yeah, but now the Chevy Suburban is still in production. Its GMC twin is no longer called a Suburban. It's called a Yukon. And the shorter version of the Suburban is, as we know, the Tahoe. But that nameplate has been around since 1935.
The Tahoe or the Suburban?
Continually since 1935. Other nameplates have come and gone. And in the GM world, we know that, you know, the Camaro was a 1960s car, and then the nameplate disappeared. When was it? Actually, in the 80s? Late 90s, early 2000s, the Camaro nameplate disappeared for a few years and then came back. And then just now, GM has announced the end of the production of the Chevy Camaro. But, you know, we kind of can expect them to come back with it in the foreseeable future.
The Suburban is certainly a ubiquitous and well recognized name. That it has become exclusive to GM is fine for GM, and I don't think anybody in this century thinks of the Suburban as being attached to any other existing car truck manufacturer other than GM. So good for that.
So do you have you owned any cars that no longer exist? Any manufacturers or any brands or any names that no longer exist?
Well, names.
How about American
Pinto, the Ford Pinto?
Yeah, see that we were talking about those last week.
And
that's
we were talking
we were
about those last week.
The Gremlins.
That was in the 75th anniversary.
Here we go. The Gremlins and the Pacer.
The Gremlins, the
and Pacer.
Yeah.
Gremlin.
Also, now when I was my first car was a Rambler Classic, a 1966 Rambler Classic. You
well,
remember
Rambler
the
is
Ramblers?
The name, too, of course, it doesn't exist anymore.
No, that's one of those that's gone. American Motors, but that car was a beast. It ran for a long, long, long time.
Well, and for the younger people around, we always talk about the big three American car manufacturers, and whether they are still American and whether they are still three is up for debate. But in my older days, like in the 70s and 80s, and I guess we're all, you know, same generation here, Mike, Robin, and myself, we had four manufacturers. We had GM, Ford, Chrysler, and American Motors. And American Motors did
produce. Studebaker's another one that's not on.
Studebaker,
my parents love Studebakers. We had Studebakers until they stopped making them.
So when did they stop making them? I mean, I have the whole chart here.
I believe that was in the 50s, late 50s, wasn't it, that they went under?
Certainly not much later at that.
Yeah.
I don't know if they reached the 60s.
Yeah, I don't think they reached the 60s, but I do distinctly remember that we had a number of Studebakers as kids.
The end of the Studebaker.
56, yep.
1936?
66.
66.
1949 to 1966.
They did make it to the 60s.
Yeah,
okay.
So you would have seen them for a while. I don't think I have seen a Studebaker. I'm even trying to think of sometimes in the parades or the car shows. Seeing a Studebaker
well,
is rare
found
now.
You might let's say, the Falls Village car show that recently occurred or not, but I think you're right. I don't think I've seen a Studebaker on the road. I'm looking at one in my memory bank mind right now, and I can picture it, grill, front grill and all that. But
the big fins on the back.
I don't remember seeing one in many, many years, if not decades.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to think. That, American Motors. What else has gone by the wayside?
Think about it.
Well, and names that they wouldn't dare bring back, too. You know, as we were talking, Pinto, Gremlin,
well,
and Pacer.
Ford Edsel.
the Edsel? Let's
nearby listening area, just over the line in New York, that has two Ford Edsels on its lot, looking very Edsel-like.
Well, yeah, and the reputation.
It used to have what I call the toilet seat front grill in the middle of the grill.
Wow.
And it was not very, it was a Ford.
But when you think about the Edsel and its reputation, that would be the perfect car to bring back as an electric car. Don't you think?
Good idea. You should get to the manufacturer on that.
Be the same thing that's
would be
going on now.
A name for an electric car, probably from Ford. Maybe it'll happen. We talked about the revitalization of the Capri. In a recent show, too. I think it was almost last week from this week's show, but recent anyways. And the Edsel was not brought up, and good idea. Let's switch to the electric car world, which we periodically or reasonably frequently talk about. It's been seesawing back and forth in the news about the decline of sales. It doesn't matter who, but now they're rebounding. And we go back to the situation where electric cars are obviously probably the future situation for much of the world, even if it takes 20 to 30 years to get that far. But the people in Europe, as I was discussing in the recent show when I was over there, understand what the practical use of electric cars is all about. Taxi services, as I mentioned in the show, big lovers of the electric car because they're not driving long distances other than maybe many trips a day between a home base and an airport, for example, or delivery to a hotel. And therefore, the cars do not rack up a lot of kilometers requiring in between trip charging. Or as the taxi driver that I may have mentioned in the show said, if I'm early for a flight pickup, I go to the Tesla charger, which is at the airport. In this case, it was in Amsterdam. And I plug into the Tesla charger and have a cup of coffee and wait for the flight to arrive. And
good
I'm never
JFK.
Worrying about range anxiety, which has been the big elephant in the room for some people, including yours truly.
Well, let me go over this. I don't know where you're going with
it. Yeah,
a lot. We do talk about it all the time, but I think the problem now is not as much range as it is infrastructure. I mean, electric car ranges are getting to be, in a lot of cases, perfectly adequate.
Correct.
But if you don't have the opportunity to recharge, doesn't matter.
These ranges, though, in this country, they're not adequate when you live in northern parts of the country or areas where, you know, you don't have the chargers available except for, you know, one every 30 miles or, hell, not even one in that. The range thing in the cold climates is a big concern.
Absolutely.
Because
but
it loses
also in hot
a lot of range.
Well, hot climates are just as
hot
bad
climates
for
as
range,
well. Yeah.
Apparently.
You people seem to forget the cars overheated in the, you know, ICE engines overheated in the heat.
Well, yeah.
Oh, no, that's not an issue. They're not going to go to ICE engine issues in that kind of situation, Jay, and to our listeners. Mike's comment is very appropriate. The states of Minnesota or the country of Canada or northern Maine or whatever, where it's really bitterly cold, ICE engines don't have the problems anymore starting in cold weather because of synthetic oil, which doesn't coagulate and get really thick the way the old non-synthetic oil compounds used to do if you didn't have the right grade and weight. And as far as heat situations, as long as the cooling systems remained okay and they didn't fail regularly, there was no range anxiety or operation anxiety like has been going on in the electric car world.
Well, and the other part that I was trying to express and didn't get to there a moment ago is when you live in areas like ours, you know, sometimes just stop and look at how far you travel in a day just doing your normal routine around here. And that's a range anxiety thing because
you can
easily do 200 miles around here. If you work for a place like the visiting nurses or the chore service where you go and visit various people for an hour or two off to the next one, one's in Sherman, one's in Kane, and one's in Cornwall, you can easily eat up that range. And that'd be worrying about
you.
Will you get to a charger
extreme,
in time?
But it can happen, and
because
people
even
who don't understand that
even
and
that,
buy a vehicle and try to use it that way and find that they're getting 180 miles before they need to charge up their vehicle and that kind of thing become people who are not going to buy another electric car, even though everything is improving in the electric car world from battery charging times to electric chargers reliability, which an article in front of me right now says Electrify America improves charger reliability and access. So you're right. And that's why the plug-in hybrid or hybrid vehicles have been enjoying a lot more success than the straight electric vehicles for the last a couple of the last few months.
Well, and the big autos are falling back into the hybrids and
yes,
getting rid
are.
Of stopping production on the electric cars because in this country, they're just not selling. There's backed up inventory with all these companies. The expense, the cost of these things has been so high. And they're not getting their money back on, and you know, to maybe in Europe the market is growing, but in America that market is flat, if not declining, right now.
Well, that is changing in terms of the news. Hope in a couple of again articles I have sitting in front of me to refute some of that general talk it's giving. There's one that says EV prices fall below Tesla for the first time since Q1 23 because of major manufacturer discounting going on to try to jumpstart or re-jumpstart the sales.
There you go, right there. So they're taking even more losses now, trying to convince the public to get into these e-mobiles.
Well, certainly as an example, Rivian apparently has been losing an average of $25,000, or maybe it's $35,000 per vehicle on their sales of their current vehicles in their line, which is only two. And they're having to do that because they can't sell them at the prices that it would take to get them a profit situation on each vehicle.
We can reconvene and talk about this in 15 years. I still think
we can.
I still think the electric cars are here to stay. I think the problem is not so much range anymore, and range will improve, has been improving, and will keep improving. The cost of lithium ion batteries is going down.
Well, lithium ion is not going down, but there are other compounds that are being discovered
the cost of the battery
that are
is
cheaper
going down.
Than lithium
it
ion,
is going
ion
down.
And they're
we
being
can discuss about
developed to be used.
we can discuss about production issues and recycling and you know, child labor used in Congolese cobalt mines, and all those are valid points. The reality is the prices of those batteries is going down. Range is improving. Part of the problem, I think, and I'm pretty adamant about that, is that legacy manufacturers like Ford, GM, and all the big ones have had conflicting interest in trying to promote electric vehicles. There has been huge pushback from the dealership industry.
True.
And Robin, you know that. The first Chevy Bolt we went to try was parked, five, 6 years ago, or six, 7 years ago, was parked way in back of the parking lot, and all the Silverado pickup trucks were parked in the front. You had to
right,
beg
Jay.
To
and
test
you
drive
were
an electric
frequently
car.
Frequently telling me what you could buy one of those Chevy Bolts for, which was way below what the sticker was, because dealers were trying to dump them, were they not?
They were trying to dump them because they were, and they still are hanging on to their business model and their interest, which is to sell ICE cars and maintain them and get money from people walking into for oil changes.
And so far, that's working. Yes.
And so far that's working, but I don't think that I think long term that will change, and some legacy manufacturers are slowly switching to EVs. It's not an overnight thing. I'm not.
And I agree. It's going to be coming forth. There's no question about it, Jay. The learning curve has changed from, I think, or is changing more toward the positive attitude about actually maybe having one electric car, and if you've got a multiple car situation, as you have brought up before, for just precisely the reason that. That car can be used for the localized driving that Mike talks about, and even though you can rack up 180 miles a day or maybe 200 if you're a delivery type of person, I'm not sure, that that's going to be a real restriction on sales of those cars, because 200 miles is not a problem necessarily, even with the weather patterns being extreme on either end of the temperature spectrum, but most electric cars that can get 280 to maybe 300 miles right now, they lose maybe 30% of that range.
So that's a full day of driving.
40, 50,
in normal
whatever.
Conditions.
Yeah. So, didn't we have some discussion about safety situation on bicyclists, electric bikes that we wanted to talk about?
Go ahead.
I've been watching the kids around our listening area ride their electric bikes up the sidewalks, and I watched one go up a hill towards our local Catholic church the other day, and he was going at an extreme speed, partly because it was starting to rain, and I know where this kid lived, and he was trying to go probably up Wells Hill Road to his residence, but had there been any pedestrians on that sidewalk, which there were not in my when I saw the situation, I would have been scared to be a pedestrian on that sidewalk. I do not think that many people understand how dangerous electric bikes are. Jay, I think you started to talk about this in a recent show, if it wasn't last week.
I did, and I'd like to talk about it more in detail.
Go right ahead. I leave it to you.
I think what I want to find out is what are the laws, what are the rules of the road, who can ride EVs? Can a six-year-old ride an EV at 40 miles an hour? Does an EV have to be registered? There are a lot of questions. And again, I have nothing against EV bicycles or EV bikes or whatever, whether they're bicycles or motorbikes. But I do think people using them have to know what they're doing. And I'm going to say this broadly, and other motorists or actually users of the road, including pedestrians, have to be aware of them.
Well, I'm afraid none of that's going to come from public information sessions. I have not knowingly seen, in whatever I've read, discussions about the dangers of electric bike use or misuse. And I don't think there's a way to know what misuse means in electric bike world. I think there's a misuse thought that can come across my mind and your mind because we understand how to ride bicycles, and I don't think electric bike users do. I do not know what happens when the tourists come up and to I think there still is an electric bike rental place in West Cornwall, for example, and I know there's one popped up in I believe Canaan, and you can go rent these bikes and just get on them and it's very different than riding a regular bicycle, but you wouldn't know it.
Well, Robin and Mike, I think we should, one of these weekends, we should all go down and rent e-bikes and tool around the countryside, and then we can discuss.
That would be
this.
A good thing to do, Jay. I know, I remember when I went up to the airport in Great Barrington a few years back when they were having an electric bike demonstration on the air, on the runway.
They were
and,
fun.
I did take a bike out for a 10 or 15 minute spin around it. And, there were all sorts of speed options that you could set the bike at. And you could get going very fast back then. That was 4 or 5 years ago. And I think they've only gotten faster.
Basically, the bicycle, the electric bike is a hybrid vehicle, right? I mean,
it is.
I guess it is, because you see people pedaling, but they're certainly going faster than the
yeah.
The
so you can put it in sport mode, in eco mode, in
rotation
all
electric.
Well, yeah. At what point do you classify that as a motorcycle? Because if you get up 30, 40 miles an hour with those things. They're going to have to start falling under the regulations of having to be licensed. And
yes, I'll come back with the information on that. I mean, we're kind of
in a future show,
shooting from the hip
good.
Here. But
okay.
what I'm pretty sure of is there is a rule, a certain speed that they have to be governed at. But it is also very easy to bypass that governor.
Yep.
And I don't know what the legal speed is, whether it's 22, 25. I really am not sure, and I'll find out. But it is very easy to bypass that, and all of a sudden now you're going 40, 45.
Yeah.
And, I mean,
you hit a stone that throws your steering into a head spin, you can get very seriously injured if you lose control of the bike going too fast.
Absolutely. And certainly nothing like that should be running on a sidewalk.
I agree, but there's no enforcement control, much as there's
let me be
the devil's advocate.
Who's going to watch it?
Let me be the devil's advocate. If we are in the center of town here with a ball field on one side and a lake and a park on the other, and there are roads in the middle, high traffic roads. I'm sitting on one right now. And you have your smaller kids. Do you want them to follow the law and ride their bicycles on the road, or do you want them to ride on the sidewalk?
Oh, this
good question.
This doesn't have
to maybe end the show if we're getting close to that.
This has more to do with the velocity of it, as far as I'm concerned, of it being on the sidewalk. I mean, the sidewalk is for pedestrians, and yes, we ride bicycles on, but not motor powered. And there has to be a limit there as to how fast they can go. I don't really want them out in the middle of the road either, but
right.
The pedestrian walkway is for that, so we have to have something that makes sense that says you can't drive this thing there. Yeah,
okay.
You have to turn it off and pedal it.
Or if it exceeds a certain speed, it comes
and another safety
only.
Issue. We have a number of rail trails around our area, and I was coming back actually yesterday. I went for a fun drive in the fun car, and I was coming off. Route 22 in New York and going towards Belgrove Road, for those of you who know that little
right.
road. And you do cross the rail trail there. And there is what looks like a pedestrian crossing, which it is. But people are riding, and you cannot see the rail trail. I mean, there are bushes and vegetation. So you know it's there, although it's not very well marked. And there is a pedestrian crossing, but there are bicycles on the rail trail that are coming and that are going to cross. And I know there are signs and stop signs on the rail trail, but you do have to be careful. And yesterday I was surprised, and I was on the road driving, and a couple bikes just came up really close to the road and kind of caught me by surprise. And I'm sure I caught them by surprise. So if you are at those intersections, whether you're the car going 50 miles an hour or 40 miles an hour on the road, slow down, bicycle, on the rail trail, keep your eyes peeled.
Yes.
And if you cross the pedestrian crossing, I believe as a even on the rail trail, you're supposed to get off your bike and walk across. Now, I don't expect cyclists to do that, but I do expect them to, you know, take their time and you know, just be careful.
I do hope we have cyclists listening to this particular show, if not other shows that we do, because that is a very good safety tip.
Yes, it is. And having said that, we have reached the end of the show, gentlemen. Thank you so much.
We'll see you.
Always a pleasure.
See you next week. Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, Robinhood Radio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.